The Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Plasencia.
Here.
Vice Chair Mainey.
Here.
Representatives Costello.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Hawkins.
Here.
Magard.
Here.
Mariano.
Here.
McCurdy.
Here.
Nixon. Rizzo, excused. Rodriguez. Schoaf.
Here.
Ranking Member Thompson. Tuck.
Here.
Zika.
Present.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Members, today we will be starting with a consent agenda for appropriations projects, bills, followed by a panel discussion on nursing. We will take up the consent agenda and vote once on agenda in its entirety. The public is welcome to testify on any of the bills listed on the consent agenda. Members, we will not take up, question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we will be in questions and debate only once. Remember, you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with the administrative assistant before the vote. Please keep in mind that passing these bills makes these projects eligible for funding, but does not guarantee that these projects will be funded or funded at the requested level. With that said, are there any questions? Public testimony? No public testimony. Is there any debate? All right, before I call the vote on this consent agenda, are there any nay vote forms? Cheryl, will you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Chair Plasencia?
Yes.
Vice Chair Mainey?
Yes.
Representatives Costello?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Magard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Rizzo? Rodriguez?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
Show the consent agenda passes. All of the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. Next, we're going to begin our panel discussion. Members, we all heard about the healthcare staffing shortages. Today, I'm hoping to learn about what our post-secondary institutions are doing to help increase the nursing pipeline to help address these shortages and what we can do to help increase the capacity in these programs. Today, we have joining us Chancellor Henry Mack, Chancellor of the Division of Career and Technical and Adult Education, Chancellor Kathy Hebda, the Chancellor of the Division of Florida Colleges, and Dr. Christy England, Vice Chancellor of Academic and Student Affairs for the Board of Governors. And we also have Chancellor Chrysler is present and available for questions as well. Thank you, all of you, for joining us. You may each begin with introductions and some opening comments, then I'll open it up to members for questions and discussion. Please mention in your comments what type of nursing credentials your system offers, how long it typically takes to earn the credentials, et cetera. You're recognized, panelists. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Henry Mack, Chancellor for the Division of Career, Technical, and Adult Education. Principally, I help oversee all technical degrees, that is to say, sub-baccalaureate degrees and clock hour programs in partnership with Chancellor Hebda and the Florida College System, but also in partnership with our 67 school districts and the 48 technical colleges that exist as public post-secondary institutions. The technical colleges, on average, have about seven or eight of the institutions, rather, have about a dozen or so healthcare programs, all at the sub-associate level, that is to say, a clock hour program. Principally with respect to nursing in particular, the technical colleges offer licensed practical nursing degrees, career certificates, LPNs, that are licensure programs awarded at the completion of 1,350 hours. So 1,350 hour clock hours is the program length of the LPN. for which an NCLEX pass is necessary. Most of those LPN graduates, in fact, the majority of them, end up matriculating into the Florida College System institution for enrollment in one of the Florida College System's ASN, or Associate of Science, nursing degree programs that, for the most part, culminate in the award or the licensure of the registered nurse. And I'll defer to my colleague, Chancellor Hebda, to speak about the college system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kathy Hebda. I'm the Chancellor of the Florida College System and the Division of Florida Colleges. And as Chancellor Mack mentioned, the Florida College System offers the same clock hour programs, many of them do, that are offered at technical centers. And it kind of varies depending on the geographical location of the technical center and the college. And then we also offer the associate level degrees in nursing, respiratory therapy, and other allied health professions. And then we also offer a baccalaureate degree in nursing, a BSN. In the Florida College System, it's a 2+2 degree, so you come in with an associate degree already, and then you can complete the baccalaureate degree in a Florida College System institution after you've completed your associate degree. So those degrees and programs all stack into each other in the Florida College System. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Krista England, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs for the State University System Board of Governors. Our universities offer three levels of programs, starting with the baccalaureate level program. We have Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, which take about 4 years to complete, typically. We also have accelerated baccalaureate level programs, which take 2 years to complete, and those are targeted for people who have degrees in other areas that may not be health related, but would like to come back and be trained as a nurse, so they can do that in 2 years. At the master's level, we have 14 different programs across the system. And at the doctorate level, we also have 14 programs across the system. 10 of our universities have colleges of nursing, and we produce about 1,700 new nurses annually. Those are your RN trained nurses that are getting the baccalaureate degree or going through the accelerated program to get the baccalaureate degree. The vast majority of our nurses do pass the NCLEX on their first try within a few months of graduation. And in our four-year programs, we have a very high four-year graduation rate. About 90% of our students graduate within the 4 years as planned. Mr. Chair, that concludes my opening remarks.
Thank you, and thank you all of you for being here. Members, are there any questions or comments? Okay, I will start us off then, and maybe possibly it may spur some additional questions. We'll go ahead and start. So I've heard from a number of stakeholders that there might be some challenges with nurses working part-time as instructors. So whether it's from the tech college, the state college, or the university system, can nurses work in their field and be part-time or adjunct instructors at the same time? And I'll open it up to the three of you to answer at will.
The answer is yes. They can work part-time for the university while working part-time in a clinical setting, and we do have those faculty currently in our system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it's the same for the college system. There's no prohibition on working part-time.
Is there, so as far as compensation is, are they, are you capped or limited in how much you can pay adjunct or part-time faculty when it comes to nursing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They're limited basically by the amount of resources available to them within their budget from within the university, but there's no other entity putting a cap on salaries.
And is that system-wide? So are we talking from at the state university level across the state of Florida, there is no cap? Because I've had discussions where, maybe the adjunct professors are different, but I've been told that in the nursing faculty members are part of the union, and because they're part of the union, they cannot be paid in excess of what other professors are being paid, regardless of what they're teaching.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's a good point. That would certainly be true. Whatever the union agreements are in place or other, you know, if they're in a category that's limited by ranges as part of the personnel system, that would absolutely apply, just like it would in any other organization.
That's the same true. Not every college has a union for their faculty, but those that do, that there would be a collective bargaining agreement. But that's, it can always be renegotiated. It really is an issue of resources. And I think that what we're hearing, and we heard at the St. Pete convening too, that St. Pete College put together on nursing for the Tampa Bay area, is that it's very competitive. So a nurse who is a bedside nurse with a baccalaureate degree can make a lot more money than maybe a college professor with a master's degree who's meeting the credentials to teach nursing.
And one last point on there. There's a good distinction to be made between your point, Mr. Chair, that is to say between the full-time professor and the adjunct. Depending on the college, you might have a college that has unionized adjunct faculty, which would then sort of constrain or restrict the number of classes that the adjunct professor could teach as a function of the negotiated contract. Or also, likewise, the full-time faculty are unionized, and there are certain constraints, salaries or number of courses able to be taught, which impact salaries as a result of the contract. For those colleges that do not have unionized faculty, particularly on the adjunct side, there is an ability or more flexibility with respect to salary per course, depending on sort of, again, the structure or the location of the college, but also too, there is a time cap by which sort of colleges are also constrained, from my understanding, where if they go above a number of hours per week for an adjunct faculty, they then would be obligated to provide other kinds of benefits, such as healthcare benefits, et cetera. So there's often a federal sort of limitation as a result of healthcare and Affordable Care Act benefits that then sort of precludes that particular adjunct faculty from working additional courses or taking on additional courses that might need to be taken on.
Chair Mariano, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that note, I definitely see where the chair is going with this, and maybe I'm able to facilitate the question a little better. If that you have a nursing professor, how does that compare to other healthcare professors, for example, doctors, and they are able to go and work and practice medicine full-time as well as teaching full-time or part-time? I'm not sure exactly how they're classified. Is there any limitation on a nursing professor being able to nurse full-time at a hospital 3 days a week and then come teach 2 days a week at your institutions?
I don't believe so, Representative Mariano. I don't think that would be an issue. I think we have faculty in the system doing that now.
Okay, follow up. I've just heard from institutions in your system specifically that have voiced the concern that they're not classified nursing professors the same way that other healthcare professors are, specifically medical doctors, and how they can go back and forth. A lot of it is limiting because of the collective bargaining agreements.
I guess I would have to go back and get more information about the nuance between the two. I'm not aware of anything currently, but I'd be happy to look into that for you, Representative.
Okay, thank you.
I do have more questions. Are you currently receiving any incentive funds, CAPE, et cetera, for nursing certificate or degree productions?
Yes, speaking for the Florida College System institutions, as well as for the district technical colleges, the CAPE industry certification performance funding bucket, which is around $20 to $24 million for post-secondary institutions annually, does incentivize the attainment of nursing credentials or certifications. Last year, in 2021, there were about 1,200 certifications that were funded and incentivized out of the CAPE performance industry certification bucket. For the Florida College System institutions, there were about 5,000 certifications that were incentivized and funded out of the CAPE industry certification bucket. It is worth noting that the Florida College System had to prorate the certifications since they awarded more certifications in total than what was appropriated for CAPE purposes in particular.
Chair, Chair, I don't believe our institutions are eligible for that kind of funding.
I also have questions around clinical training sites. Are we having a hard time, or I'm sorry, are nursing students having a hard time finding clinical training sites?
I'll start this round. thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there are difficulties with clinical training sites. That's for sure.
And I believe the institution locates the clinical placement sites for the students. I don't think the students have sent out to do that themselves. It's on the responsibility is on the institutions to find those places for them.
Yes, sir, that's what I meant. The institutions have a hard time placing all of their students where they need to.
So I've heard, and asking if you've seen the same, but I've heard that clinical sites are selling slots. Have you heard this, or is this true?
Mr. Chair, we have heard the same thing. I've not talked to any hospitals or clinical sites myself, but we've heard that from our nursing deans that is an issue.
We've heard the same thing, but we haven't done an investigation or anything to get specific data.
So in Hospital 1507, there was a nursing study. Do we have an update yet on that nursing study?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we did the Chancellor did a presentation for the Talent Development Council in December. And if you've got a specific data point, we could do that. There were several data points that we provided as part of that update. Is there something specific, or you want me to just run through some of those data points?
You don't have to run through the data points okay. Unless somebody asks.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
So I do have one more question. So are institutions currently partnering with local hospitals or healthcare providers?
Yes, Mr. Chair, they definitely are. Absolutely.
You're just...
Yeah, well, they're required to find the clinical placement spot, yeah. So yes.
So when we're taking a look at the issue at hand, and so I just had a conversation with the dean of a medical school here in the state of Florida, and we have a labor shortage, you know, across industries, healthcare, welding, machinery, I mean, you name it, we have a labor shortage. We've known about our labor shortage in nursing. We have a labor shortage in healthcare in general. What do you think has worked best over the years? And are there mitigating factors that are out of our control that potentially we could either work with our state colleges or our state universities to help get past those or find a solution for?
I'll start. I know everybody has something to say about this. To answer part of your question, Mr. Chair, look, thinking about the partnerships themselves, there have been a number of places, in addition to the regular clinical placements and course things that they have to work with hospitals on, where hospitals have offered to provide a nursing faculty for a short period of time or for a limited number of classes or students for a college. There are certainly things that, like I mentioned earlier, the example of St. Pete College, President Tondra Williams convening the medical folks in the Tampa Bay area to talk about what some of the problems are and solutions. And those partnerships exist across the state. They're not at scale. They're, to borrow an old phrase, 1,000 points of light. And so I think part of the challenge then comes back to systemic, system-wide resources for faculty. Faculty are the issue. There was also an equipment issue, and sometimes there is a space issue sometimes to have enough space that's appropriate for nursing, but a lot of colleges use their relief dollars to purchase some of that really high-end equipment. So it really comes down to having the faculty that are qualified and able and available to teach. Chancellor.
To add to that, it's an interesting and great question, one that also sort of gets at how, I guess, maybe hospitals themselves or hospital associations retain the nurses that they hire so that they don't leave. And one of the great best practices that I think has resulted out of this body and the governor's leadership is incentivizing apprenticeships. Typically, apprenticeships are thought of in terms of construction trades, but we've seen a proliferation of health science apprenticeship programs. And while the apprenticeship structure does not necessarily permit pre-licensure training programs, Trumont, for example, started a registered apprenticeship program last year that effectively trains already licensed nurses to enter into the profession and specialize. So if you have an RN, if you are licensed and you're looking to specialize in a particular area of nursing, like psych or surgical nursing, et cetera, you can enter into a registered apprenticeship program that is effectively a post-licensure program that will upskill you. And it's a great incentive mechanism to keep the RN, since that is theoretically subsidized by the hospital and incentivized by the state. So I would just point to that as something that has arisen recently as a best practice to, Mr. Chair, get at your question around talent and maintaining an adequate supply of nurses.
Mr. Chair, we've heard similar themes from the state university system around numbers of faculty and space to accommodate additional students. Our institutions are eager to try to serve more students and produce more nurses, but they are constrained by resources. Kind of build on some of the ideas that my counterparts just shared, we do have a program that University of South Florida is doing. They're calling it an externship program, where a student nurse in their senior year spends 8 to 10 weeks paid in a clinical site with a mentor and getting some really hands-on, one-on-one training on that site from a specific individual. And I believe they're having some good success with that. They're also doing some wellness training with the students in their final year or two of training to prepare them for the transition into the workforce, and then also to kind of help them with their wellness and well-being as they become nurses and they're working, with the eye on retaining them in the nursing field and in the job that they go into. So I think those are some kinds of programs that have some real possibilities. I've also heard of a program up in Tennessee where they're developing a pipeline with secondary schools to bring in students into camps and mentoring programs, shadowing programs to try and get students interested early and try to get them to retain in the region and where they are, where you're having regions with difficulties recruiting and retaining nurses. And I will also share one other idea that has surfaced, and that has to do with loan forgiveness. For both your nursing faculty and your working nurses in the profession, a loan forgiveness program might be a really attractive incentive to keep somebody in a job, whether it's in a university setting or in a clinical setting. Those are just a few ideas that we've been kicking around for a few years.
Thank you. And I'm glad you brought up wages and retention. So I've heard from a number of people that we may be losing nurses nursing graduates to other states because of wages. Do we have a percentage of nurses that we retain and subsequently lose to other states? And is that a concern that we have?
Mr. Chair, that's right now it's anecdotal information. We haven't been able to find any data that really helps us track people across state lines. We have heard something similar. And during COVID, we've heard a lot of nurses leaving their home state, not just Florida, but to do travel nursing. Other states are paying these nurses to come, and you know they're offering them really incredible wages. So they may go work in one state for 6 months, and then another state comes out with a better program, and then they go to another state. And you know, and they're nowhere near their home state, but that's something that we've seen during the last couple of years that's added a bit of complexity to this discussion. But it's hard to track.
Members, any questions? I appreciate your time. This has been very informative. Please let me know at any time if you do want to have a further conversation on this. My office is always open, and I know many of the members on this committee share the same sentiments that I do. Members, before we end this committee, we do have a couple of public notices. And you guys, Mr. Jack Corey, representing the Florida Nurses Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. Thank you so very much for focusing on this issue today. I have sent to you, Mr. Chairman, and all of the members of the committee this morning, a copy of the summary of the Florida Trend article on nursing critical condition that they published in November of this year, which will speak to several of the points that you asked here, especially about the fact that nursing faculty are making $20,000 a year less than a nurse in a hospital setting. The fact that we are training nurses, but we're not letting them under Florida law perform to their full educational training, and those are leaving and going to other states. The full article is there. There's also information in the that I sent to you on the Florida Center for Nursing. This legislature approved it again last year. The governor approved it in July. Unfortunately, it's taken the Department of Health about 6 months to get it up and operating, but it will be up and operating at the University of South Florida, and we'll be able to do those types of studies for this committee and the other committees. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. Ms. Kelly Millett from Kaiser University. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Just briefly, Kelly Millett representing Kaiser University, and just wanted to say our client Kaiser is a member of ICUF, and my understanding is that ICUF has submitted some recommendations to you on this topic, and just wanted to say we appreciated the discussion today, and we look forward to being a continued part of the discussion and part of finding some solutions to these issues. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Millett. Members, before we conclude this committee, I just want to say thank you to everyone who came up and spoke. Always appreciative of your knowledge and your intent to come up here and share with us, what you think is in the best interest of our state. I think we have a great relationship between the agency and this body, and we always are very fortunate to have your presence, so thank you. And members, this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Schoaf moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.